The following program is being brought to you on the Grain Talk Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit thegraintalknetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability. Your hosts are Bill Reed and John Becker, co-authors of the Integrative Design Guide to Green Building. This program will help you take sustainability to the next level. Here are your hosts, Bill Reed and John Becker.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is
Hi,
Bill.
Everyone.
And we've gotten emails from around the world, so we know that it may not be the afternoon or the morning in the U.S. People are listening to this. We are in our final show for this series and the arc that we have worked on over the last 13 episodes. And maybe, John, we can actually maybe revisit the arc in the middle of the conversation. But I want to just set it up today. And we end every show with this little triptych. And I'll repeat it, but I want to go slowly, and I want to, and really, this show is about the last part of the triptych. But it says, to do different things, we need to do things differently. And before we can do things differently, we need to think about them differently. And finally, before we think differently, we actually need to be or become different.
So this show,
and, yeah, John, you want
to? Yeah, what this sort of wrap up show is about. Is, all right, well, we keep talking about, and everything we've, almost every episode led to this, how do we be different? In other words, how do we inspire change? And that's really what, Bill, I think I really want to chat about today. And really what I think this means is, how do we delve deeper, I mean, you've been calling it delving deeper for a while, into personal development in order to inspire change? How do we do that?
All right. Well, I'm going to do a little pushback. You and I had a conversation an hour ago preparing for the show, and it was actually some interesting tension around the subject.
Yep.
And I think, I always put on the practice hat, if the left brain approach to the world, and say, well, how are we going to get people to actually do this whole system, living system work to achieve real sustainability? Let's make it real. And you know, how do we scale up? How do we actually move the world and shift the world? And your comment was, well, that's pretty left brain. That's part of the problem that got us there in the first place.
I would suggest we move the world by moving ourselves.
Uh-huh. And say more about that.
Well, if we try and intellectualize this, we'll never get there. Now, with that said, of course, it does take an approach that is practical, like you're talking about. And what I'm suggesting is that it's every bit as practical to be working on yourself in terms of getting to a being state, and more on that as we discuss this, as it is trying to project that out into the world. Because if you are in a being state and operating accordingly, you are part of the world, and there is a connection there that we just don't see very clearly most often.
Well, we're always in a being state. It depends on what our being state is.
But if we're conscious of the being state, what I'm talking about.
Okay, so how do we become... So what you're saying is practical, is that we have to be conscious of the need to change.
That's it. Now, what's really interesting about that is it's such an incredible paradox to me, at least, anyway, in that oftentimes what we find ourselves thinking that we're doing is striving to be happy, right? And I think
Wait. Okay, that's a leap. So
I know. I'm getting there. The idea that, particularly in Western culture, probably most poignantly in America, almost everything that we see asks us to enjoy. Now, it seems to me that that's perfectly appropriate. However, it's equally inappropriate not to understand that pain and suffering is equally important. We tend to pejoratize those as not being very useful. And what I'd like to suggest is, if we look at nature and understand that in nature, basically the forces that, and in fact Wendell Berry said this, the forces that threaten us are the same forces that preserve us and renew us. What that means is that the threat of feeling pain and suffering, if it keeps us from feeling those things, then it's also keeping us from renewing, is really what I'm saying.
Right. So I'll expand that a little bit, John, is that life, and that's what we're talking about sustaining, life is evolutionary, and evolution requires death to have rebirth.
Fire is a perfect example of that, right?
Yeah. Okay, good. It is a perfect example.
And for millennia, time out of mind, as Jerry would say, Native Americans, Indians, understood that fire was a force that both destroyed the existing vegetation but also renewed it. And that, in fact, pretty much since European settlement of North America, fire has been viewed as life's enemy, right? We want to.
Well, nature's been viewed as life's enemy, right? You keep nature at bay.
Of course, then fire would be too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's now, though, accepted that fire plays a major role in the maintenance and, in fact, life of any plant community, and that suppression of fire actually creates the opposite extreme, catastrophic fire. That's what we want to make sure.
By the way, the catastrophic fires that are happening now on the West Coast are actually killing the soil. They're actually denaturing the soil, if you will.
Tell me why.
Well, the fires are so intense. They're not cold fires anymore. They're such hot fires that all the microbial life many feet deep are being killed.
Whereby if those fires were sort of annual and managed, then that would have the opposite effect, yes?
That's right. It would actually be life-enforcing because it's only burning a very shallow depth and deacidifying the soil and creating carbon.
Okay, so I'd like to use that metaphor for how we sustain life in ourselves and engage this transformative process of development that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go there, let's just review real quickly a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about, Bill. I mean, every show, it seemed, ended up someone saying, well, I had to go through a major transformation in understanding to start to do this work well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because this work is just right. If you don't do, let me characterize it another way and push back, John, is that we have to do, sustainability requires us to do different things. Significantly different things. For us to do those things significantly different requires transformation in ourselves.
So what we're trying to get at here is how does that happen? So how does that happen?
How do you practice transformation?
I'd ask it slightly differently.
Okay.
How do we inspire change by setting a stage, an environment that, in fact, invites transformation.
Now, and I'm going to push back on that because transformation requires a specific, if we're really going to be intentional about this, it's a practice.
I agree, but I'm going to push back again because if one is not practiced at practicing with an intention transformation, how do you get started?
Okay, so the question is, how do you get started?
Yeah, and that's really my question, is how do you get started? And
well, so how did you start? I think now, let's make it personal.
Oh my heavens! This start for me was way before I even realized that my work in architecture and sustainability with the environment was even going to happen. That work all began for me in 1997. But in 1993, is when it really began, way before I knew I was going to do what I was going to do. And that actually had to do with the biggest shift in my life, followed by another one several years later, which was going through an incredible period of emotional pain. And what I discovered in that was that I actually needed to, in some ways, deconstruct the conditioned responses emotionally that I had gotten from childhood.
Because you had them so often, you felt like, where's this going to stop?
Yeah. I went through a classic psychotherapy set of transformations, really looking at Carl Jung as a guide in a way to bring into consciousness that which was not. What I discovered was so much of my behavior was not the result of me making choices. It was rather sort of rote introjection of what I had learned as a young child about pretty much everything, but predominantly what love relationships were. Well, that took quite an internal journey to get through. It was really painful. I can remember, you know, several evenings curled up in a fetal position on the floor of my apartment, not being able to do much but breathe. It was just so emotionally painful. Well, in some ways, that was the fire inside of me, burning away the vegetation that had become mature in its way in order to renew and allow new vegetation, new emotional ways of being to emerge. And the fire metaphor for me really works, because I think that that's what happened internally. So what there's an adjunct to this story that happened only a few years ago, but before we go there, the question is, do we want to invite that kind of emotional pain in order to transform? So I think Gail Lindsay would have said, well, that same thing can happen through creativity and joy.
Yeah, it's a loop, right? It's a total. You're one end of the spectrum or another, but it's transformational.
Yeah, and so it leads me back to the question, how do we invite transformation? I mean, I wouldn't want anyone to have to experience that pain during the pain, but I would like to have everyone experience the joy of having walked through that force and making those new discoveries about consciousness.
So a design process, a true sustainable design process that is going to reflect a being issue is going to be a transformational process.
Well, I'm assuming you went through a similar one on some level, right?
Yeah, quite a few, and they keep occurring, thankfully. But let's take a break now, and we'll be back in a minute or so.
Great.
Are you thinking green? Want to become a host expert on the Green Talk Network? Contact Jeff Spinard, president of our Internet Radio Division, at 480-294-6417. That's 480-294-6417. Or click on How to Become a Host on our homepage. You're listening to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
Hey, y'all. This is Stephen Cochran. As a country artist, I have traveled around this great country of ours, often meeting our brave men and women in uniform. And as a Marine and veteran of both the Iraq and Afghan conflict, I know how important it is to thank our troops who defend our freedom each and every day. One of the best ways to thank them is to give their children and spouses the gift of education. Scholarships for 2 years, 4 years, and vocational school. This is exactly what a national charity, Thanks USA, does. Please go to their website, www.thanksusa.org. to make a generous donation to the Thanks USA Scholarship Fund for the families of the troops, and I thank you.
If you're thinking of starting a business or are already in business, tune in as the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur addresses business ownership concerns. Business novice or not, let the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur help you each week as we present and discuss the meat and potato issues of starting and running a business. Join the discussion. There's always room for your thoughts and opinions. The Kitchen Table Entrepreneur is a valuable program you should be tuning into every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice
Voice America Business Network.
Attention shoppers, if anyone is missing a rather plump set of love handles, please come to the customer service counter and claim them. The ample love handles were lost in the produce department where their former owner had purchased fruits and veggies to munch on during the big game. Thank you and have a good day.
Small step number 81, snack on fruits and veggies. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back. This is Bill.
And John.
And we left with talking about the idea of transformation. Picking up on John's fire metaphor reflection from the first section, it seems that transformation happens when we are destabilized in some way. You know, John had an emotional crisis. I think we have all been there. The design process, then, if we are going to shift into doing different things, seems to me to be the most effective ones are actually destabilizing, which is a really scary place to be. But that's when the big breakthroughs happened, anyway, in my life in as an architect. When confronted, I talked about a building project we were working on where the client asked us to not do a certain thing, and then yet we were confronted with that in the charrette. And I had over 50 people staring at me waiting for a decision. And at that point, there was a big leap. It was very destabilizing. I realized that I was either going to be fired. The idea of being a hero never entered my mind because I didn't know any way out of it. But I had to follow what I felt was right. It was extremely threatening to me. And yet at the same time, I knew I couldn't go anywhere else. So by putting myself in the situation of having to make a quick, snap decision, it actually shifted the design to being an entirely different outcome, which is actually incredibly positive.
What was it internally that allowed you to do that?
Say that again, John?
What was it internally that allowed you to do that? I mean, that's a great practical example, in situ, in a charrette, under fire, in front of a crowd, quick on your feet, got to do it this way. But it seems as if there needed to be something that beforehand prepared you internally to be able to have the courage to do that.
Okay, well, that's good. Good. That's a good question, because then that gets back to the what we were talking about before, where I said there's a practice necessary to help you transform.
Yep.
And the practice, and I wouldn't have said it like that then. I do now. The practice is being incredibly intentional about what was important. So what was important to me was that this project achieve some level of credible sustainability, whatever that meant at the time. And the credible sustainability, the ability to do that, was being challenged by the quote-unquote practicality of the design process and what the client's expectations were.
You were being pushed out of your comfort zone.
They were being pushed out of their comfort zone.
But interestingly, so were you.
Well, I was, because I didn't, because here I am as an architect, and this, I'm sure a lot of listeners can relate to this. We're here to serve the client. The client is paying our bills. And so the paradox is, yet we're being asked to develop new ideas for a client.
Yeah. And whenever I would come up against that shove, I mean, sometimes I wasn't courageous enough to do it, but if I was, I would say back to the client, I would say, well, why did you hire me?
Yeah.
What are you paying?
I would say, well, you're going to do a building.
Right. Yeah.
What kind of building?
Well, that's gotten us in trouble sometimes.
What's that?
I said, that's gotten us in trouble sometimes.
Yeah. Well, so getting back to this idea of practice, I guess what I had been so intent on achieving some level of a new worldview, if you will, in my architectural practice through a lens of sustainability, that was my default position. But that wouldn't have been my default position if I hadn't been very intentional about my purpose as an architect.
Well, I'd like to follow that up, too. because what the arc we've been on started with, if you recall, was what are green buildings, then what are systems, then what is life, and then it launched into really the meat of the arc, which is understanding beneficial interrelationships between systems and patterns, and that what sustainability is sustaining life, right?
So the patterns of life and the systems.
Patterns, hence, what we keep searching for, what we need to be conscious of maintaining our openness to discovering those patterns, rather than thinking we know the patterns a priori.
Ah, so that's really good, because the discovery process in and of itself is threatening.
It really is. And here's an example. Fast forward from that emotional pain that I went through in 1993 to an experience that I had at right smack at the beginning, or actually just the end of 2.5 years ago, so I guess what would that be, 2006? Christmas 2006. The day after Christmas, I was diagnosed with cancer. And the good news is that everything's fine now. The tumor was removed, cancer-free, all that business, so we can put that aside. But at the time, we didn't know that. And the good news is that I had bladder cancer, which was caught early enough that in males, it's completely treatable, if not curable, through a couple of therapies. Anyway, there were about 10 days, though, because of the holidays, before surgery could occur, that we just really didn't know the extent of it. And that, those were really very, very scary days for me. Mm. I remember talking to you about it, too, Bill. And at that point in my life, I was really, really deathly afraid of death, if I can put it that way. Death, to me, meant sort of being... my image of it was being transported to the coldest, darkest places in the universe and everything receding away from me at the speed of light. That's pretty...
A big black hole.
Oh, man, it was just so scary. So in, of course, that experience of not knowing the quickness or not of my imminent demise, it'd just be quicker than normal, at least in my mind, I had to confront that, and it was a very scary time. Now, what's fascinating about this is, now fast forward to today, became very intentional for the past 2.5 years of really looking that right in the face, and I had to become destabilized in a pretty intense way to get myself to a place where I remember this week just saying to one of my good friends, you know what, this is amazing, but I'm no longer afraid of dying.
Mm. Wow.
And part of that...
I was going to ask you about that. I was wondering how you were doing with that.
Really well. And you know, I can't say what kind of happened first. It's really helped me understand patterns of life. And understanding patterns of life has really helped me understand this lack of fear of death in terms of this set of molecules that is me right now is just a temporary manifestation of them being in this place at this time. And when that's over, they'll just become part of the pattern again. The work on trying to discover these patterns, as well as the work on my internal world, asking, well, where does that fear of death come from? Because, by the way, I sort of did a non-scientific survey and asked several hundred people whether they were afraid of death or not, and slightly more than half weren't. So I had to realize, well, wait a minute. There must be something inside of my psyche that needs to be addressed in order to address this fear. So where is this all practical? I think what it is having to push ourselves to the edges of our, in fact, beyond the edges of our level of comfort in order to make new discoveries, particularly when the key is making discoveries about the patterns of life if we're going to sustain life.
So I'm really glad you went down that road, John. I think that, and yet I can hear people saying, what the heck are we talking about?
And heck wouldn't be the word, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And yet, I'll tell you, unless people, and I say this in presentations and seminars, until we understand that we all die, we are never going to address sustainability in an effective way.
Oh, say more about that.
Well, because if we are more interested in ignoring the inevitable, and it's the only inevitable, but death and taxes, right? So, and death is much more inevitable than taxes. We know that it is the one thing that we all face together, and it's the one thing as a Western society that we run away from screaming in general.
It in fact is the only thing, because you don't have to pay taxes if you don't want to, but there are consequences.
So where this is that until we are aware of the cycles of life and are not taking the superficialities of life, because so much of our life is bent on ignoring or running away from that. Look, cosmetic surgery, the whole medical situation is crazy. You know, that to get political right now. How much money do we spend in the last year of sustaining life in our culture? I think it's the bulk of medical costs.
Sustaining human life.
And what did we do? What did the native peoples do years ago? The Eskimos would walk out into the Arctic and just gradually go to sleep. And so the reason why death is so important is that we are, waste equals food, to make it practical, is that we are part of this cycle, and unless we confront that, we are not going to address the purpose of life at a deep level.
Well, you know, what unintentionally just happened in my mind is we started at a place, went through a loop, and came back to it, so it comes right back to that Wendell Berry quote again about the natural forces that so threaten us are the same forces that preserve and renew us.
Yeah.
That decay and death is absolutely critical in terms of sustaining life.
And so, John, your transformation was a death. You died a small death.
Yeah, I had to burn away. There's the fire again. And in a way, those old behaviors and belief systems that were holding me back in fear, and what emerged was actually the opposite, which is a much deeper, and deeper is probably not a good, clear enough word, but
significant,
a more visceral, I would say, feeling of belonging and love for all creation in ways that when I was fearful of death, I could not have understood.
So I don't think this is a leap now. I think this is, our conversation has actually set this up, is that ultimately, unless we, in working with our design processes and the people that are working on the design teams, are engaged at that level of introspection, we are probably going to be superficial about sustainability.
So, we'll ask the question again. How do you set up, encourage, nurture that kind of transformation when you're engaging in a design process or in any realm? How do you do that?
So we're making it part of the, we're going to come up to a break here. Let's come back to that and talk about how we actually engage in a deeply significant design process. Okay, back after the break.
This is the Green Talk Network, helping to provide a sustainable future for us all. If you're thinking of starting a business or are already in business, tune in as the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur addresses business ownership concerns. Business novice or not, let the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur help you each week as we present and discuss the meat and potato issues of starting and running a business. Join the discussion. There's always room for your thoughts and opinions. The Kitchen Table Entrepreneur is a valuable program you should be tuning into every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Hi, I'm Wendy Bellissimo with Nesting.com, proud sponsor of March of Dimes' premier walking event, March for Babies, formerly known as Walk America. You know, more babies begin healthy lives because of March of Dimes research and programs. And with our support, we can do even more for families all over America. One day, all babies will be born healthy, but we have to walk to get there. Join the March for Babies. Sign up at marchforbabies.org.
where can you discuss environmental, ethical, and economic issues with the leading thinkers on these topics? Join host Shane Snipes for One Greener Radio. This program will spotlight key areas such as social impact and environmental ideas, as well as social entrepreneurship. Come on board for lively and engaging discussions with Shane and his experts. One Greener Radio promises to keep you thinking and brainstorming for more. One Greener Radio is broadcast live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Green Talk Network.
The Green Talk Network is here. Spread the green.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, everyone. You know, Bill, during the break, I had a thought, and it suddenly occurred to me this paradox of needing death for life is essentially the fundamental myth in, and when I say myth, I say that really reverently, in most of the world's major religions.
Mm-hmm.
So we could go down that road, but I think maybe it might be more of a helpful discussion to me and maybe to our listeners if I asked you this question again that I asked us for the break. All right. This kind of transformation of walking through the fire, of burning away the limits of how we see the world in order to see it differently, how do we make that practical? How can we inspire transformation in our work with others as we're trying to design and develop communities?
So you want me to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I do. That's questions
okay.
right
okay.
at you, brother.
All right. Well, number one, we have to allow space in the design process for that kind of reflection.
What do you mean?
Meaning, instead of ready, fire, aim, like we do our designs, the architect can't resist picking up the pencil or the computer screen and showing some objects with no reflection on energy or water or materials or habitat. But even deeper than that, and we talked about the fifth element of the Akashic field, is consciousness. What are we being conscious of? What's important to us? What's important to the client at the deepest level? Not just doing a building, but why are you doing that building?
Are there leverage points for that?
Well, there are certainly lots of questions that can be resourced for groups. You know, the five whys we talked about, the Toyota Corporation uses, going asking every question to a level of five whys. One of the most significant ones, but first of all, you have to actually meet. John, I like what you do. You take the client out to dinner before you ever do a proposal, right? Or in the process of doing a proposal.
At least as often as possible. Sometimes it's not, but that's the preferable mode.
Sure. So you're actually getting to know the person. There's a comfort level. It's not just a mechanical process. There's a being state level as opposed to a doing state level with this relationship. You're developing a relationship with the client. That, and then you can actually help the client understand what actually is necessary to achieve deep design. And if they're interested in sustainability, you can actually have these discussions about what kind of world we're trying to transform ourselves into.
So are you explicit about this?
Yeah, I am.
Tell me how you approach it.
Just like this, we've had conversations. We've had conversations with clients about death. We've had conversations about clients about love, about illness, about family, about what's important to them, about their values, about what motivates them. And sometimes we don't do that, but even in charrettes, we actually ask this question. And the question, the fundamental question. Let's get back to systems thinking. The fundamental question in a system. You know your elements, you know they've got to be in a relationship, but the third definition or aspect of a system is purpose. And by actually getting the client and the design team to think about purpose, and I don't mean what you're just doing, what's the objective, but what's your being state you're trying to create, what's the will that's driving you forward at the deepest level, those are some of the richest discussions I've ever had.
I'm really glad you went there, because that leads me to want to pull it back to the personal again.
Okay.
This tension. if that's going to be successful, the best way each of us as a member of the group can prepare best for that, I think, is really if we spend time finding our own discipline for doing the development work that each of us needs to do.
That's
in other
the
words,
practice part, right?
What each of us finds is purposeful.
Mm.
And what's interesting is after that cancer experience for me, or during it, during that 10 days, I asked myself a critical question, and that is, all right, don't know how much time I have left on this planet. With the time I have, whatever it is, what is it that I really want to do? What's my purpose? What would give me meaning? Where can I make my kind of little contribution? And it was with this work. So when I say this work, I mean pursuing sustainable developments. So that internal leverage point, I think, helped shift my consciousness and allowed, I guess, oh no, I know, it allowed me to really start to look less at fragments and more at the whole. And they both fed each other in a way, in that the fear of death leaving was a function of understanding me as part of the whole, and the whole is creation. Everything that's manifest that we see around us on the planet, which we're trying to sustain, particularly life. Now, although that sounds like it's going down a rabbit hole, I'm not sure it is, because there's a quote that I'd like to read from Donella Meadows, because I think there are, for each of us, a leverage point like that that is transformative in a very seminal way. And here's what she says. She actually gives us a caution. She says, magical leverage points are not easily accessible, even if we know where they are and which direction to push them. There are no cheap tricks to mastery. You have to work at it, whether that means rigorously analyzing a system or rigorously casting off your own paradigms and throwing yourself into the humility of not knowing.
Mm. So the design process is the beginning of a great design process is accepting the not knowing.
Oh, man, that is so hard for a lot. That's so hard.
Yeah, because we want to manage expectations, right?
Well, we all were taught, conditioned. Our education teaches us that there's an answer to everything, right? Well, that's not true. But for the most part, Western primary and secondary education is all about learning answers. And so in some ways, the tracks in our brain, the grooves in the vinyl of our left hemisphere are imprinted with this belief system that says there's an answer and we can know it, and if we don't know it, we're stupid.
Yeah, and you're going to suffer death as a result.
Oh, that's funny. That just reminded me of, and somehow this seems appropriate, something Mark Twain said. He said, you know, and I think this is appropriate for in the context of the practicality of trying to work in these charrettes. He said, you know, I'd rather say nothing and have folks think I'm stupid than open my mouth and remove all doubt.
So stop talking and let people actually... This gets to the point of allowing space, right? Allowing time, reflection.
That's where I wanted to come back to.
Yeah, you want to
amplify
that,
Bill? How do you actually plan that, or how do you go about that?
Well, this is one of these disciplines. This is one of these practices that I'm gradually incorporating based on the way our company works, which is that reflection is an incredibly important process. That, you know, maybe before each break you take in a charrette, stop and say, where are people? What are your reflections about what just happened? That's when so much of the power comes out, because people are, and just let there be space. Let there be time for people to go a little bit deeper and not look for automatic answers.
You know, there's a technique that reminds me of that we've been using now for several years, and that is if it's a complex enough project where we can extend the charrette time, the all-hands team meeting workshop time, to 2 days or overnight, we found that extraordinarily helpful. Because on the second day, always begin with nothing more than a period of reflection. simply canvassing from the folks in the room, hey, you know, you slept on this, it's simmered a little bit, what are your reflections? And more than half the time, someone in the room comes up with a transformational thought that shifts the entire room's thinking. Remarkable. Have you had that experience?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. In fact, just a bit of a practical advice, even when you have a day-long charrette, don't hold it over a day, hold it over a half day and a half day, so there's a night in between it.
Yeah. Okay.
People like that too, by the way, because they don't waste a whole, that's the wrong word, but they don't utilize a whole solid day.
By the way, what's interesting about that quote I read from Dana Meadows in her treatise on how to intervene in a system, It's interesting because she also says in there that the fundamental paradigm shift, and she uses that exact set of two words, paradigm shift, which I think has in some ways become banalized, but in the truest sense of paradigm shift, she says also that it can happen instantaneously, right? So that suggests that to me at least, it suggests that if each of us can find a discipline for developing ourselves and our purpose, we're really, in a way, I'm going to suggest, preparing ourselves for that instantaneous shift or series of instantaneous shifts that I think are probably required in order to discover, recognize those patterns of life that are so critical to understanding in order to inform our work in a way that is sustainable.
Well, let's pick up on the word, and I know we've talked about this, but I think it's so important to emphasize the word development is the most powerful word in our language, I think, or one of them.
Well, I think it bears repeating, what does development mean?
So we think about develop as to at the richest but simplest level, just to add value. So that's what a developer does. They add value, whatever that might mean, to land by erecting a multifamily apartment building.
But most of the time that's limited to economic value, yes?
That's right. So what does it mean to add value in terms of the ecological systems and the social systems, right? So,
by the way, I would also suggest that's temporary economic value. But
yeah. That's right. So what's our time horizon, and how responsible should we be? And again, this is kind of rushing death. Let's get our money now, right? It's before I die. And the idea of development in its richest form, it means to create new potential. And that's, when we're talking about sustaining life, that is where we have to go, because evolutionary development is about life adding value. That's what living systems do. They add value. They continually create new richness in an ecosystem.
And one more way to see that is that etymology of develop is reveal or reveal, meaning that we need to discover there is a value.
All right.
So let's take a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
The Green Talk Network is here. Spread the green.
Do you know what it takes to reach massive success? Do you know that if you change your thinking,
you can change your life?
The Development Connection with host Amy Himes will give you the keys to reach ultimate success. Each show will feature topics to help you reach personal, career, and business ownership success. And you'll learn how to enlarge your vision to move ahead in life and within your organization. The Development Connection with Amy Himes is live every Monday on Voice America at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific. Listen today and move forward tomorrow.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn. So follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Issa provides homeowners and investors eager to invest well in real estate the knowledge, resources, and tools necessary to generate significant wealth. Our focus will be the paradigm. Live where you want. Invest where it makes the most sense. Listen live to the brightest minds in real estate investment every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. That's Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Issa, where America learns to invest.
Eco-conscious trends and lifestyles. You're listening to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
We're back, and just before the break, we were discussing again the definition of development and looking at its etymology just before we went away on the break, tracing it once again back to deveil or remove the veil, and that's the discovery process and the discovery of what life meant in that place with an understanding that a role is one of tending, if you will, because of the discussion that we've had a number of times that humans are not separate from nature. Now, how do you do that? How do you make those discoveries? And there's an extraordinary book that we talked about once or twice earlier, written by M. Kat Anderson, called Tending the Wild. And at the very end of that book, Kat offers a coda. And the coda is entitled The Indigenous Wisdom in the Modern World. And what she offers are five means by which to engage this discovery process, five essential principles or focal points. So, Bill, there's a couple of them that you think are really remarkable, and I think they all are, but there's one or two I think you wanted to focus on.
Yeah, one in particular, which fits in the context of our show today, and I'll read it. Achieving sustainable use of the Earth's resources will involve cultural changes, I want to underline that, cultural changes as much as advances in knowledge and transformation of economies.
All right.
So cultural changes, another way to think about that is the shift that has to happen is that we need to be involved in not just the nuts and bolts prescriptions for when, where, and how to harvest and manage a plant or population and habitat corridors and groundwater health and all that. It comes from human motivations. So what and we can circle back to a number of the points we made in our show, John, is that ultimately it's the will of the client that makes this work easy. Pushing a rope uphill with a client or a design team that are not really that interested in it make this incredibly hard work. In fact, I would say it's impossible work. So the question is, how is the client and how is the design team inspired and motivated to take on a deep sense of responsibility and purpose for this work? Is the nature of a design process. It's an integral nature of the design process. And if we give that short shrift, we actually will not succeed. I won't say not. That's too much of a hard line. But it's very difficult to succeed at any level of sustainability.
Well, when you read that. But actually, that's the fourth of the five codas.
Yep.
The principles in the coda. You emphasize cultural changes, that the sustainable use of Earth's resources will involve cultural changes. Say more about that. What do you mean? What do you think Kat Anderson?
Well, our culture needs to repurpose its role. And again, that gets back to whether we are occupying the land or whether we're inhabiting the land. In fact, whether the land is even inhabiting us. So one guy, one gal is not going to make this shift, but it's going to happen one guy and one gal at a time in terms of the developmental processes that we are all going through. So how do we take every building design, every community master plan, every opportunity to function as a developmental process that actually will shift the culture?
And when you say shift the culture, would it be reasonable in your mind that could happen quickly, or is this slow and incremental? The reason I'm asking that is because the green movement right now, as we've talked about, is dominated by, I'd call it a doctrine of do less damage.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think we've been trying to get at fundamentally is if we understand the patterns of living systems, we actually can participate in affirming abundance.
Mm-hmm.
So this incremental shift from just essentially, you know, take everything we want, which is primarily American or Western culture, into do less damage.
Take everything we want less.
There you go. Clearly is insufficient because it just uses up everything more slowly. Well, but then the question is there an everything? Now, we need a whole other 13 shows to talk about that.
Yeah, that just kind of flipped me into a difference.
Yeah, it flipped me too, but can't quite go there. I think what we're trying to say as a kind of a final wrap-up of this arc is if we can shift a cultural belief system gradually or immediately, and I think it's both doing the disciplined work of personal transformation that can lead to discoveries such as those instantaneous paradigm shifts that Danella Meadows talks about, to basically a fundamental cultural moire or value of what abundance is and how one affirms that. That to me would be remarkable. I think what we've been talking about is over and over again how one does that, and each of us has to discover that.
Well, but it does require boldness, and it does require a practice of understanding our purpose. So those of us who are involved in a sustainable ethos, it just requires us to go deeper and deeper. And I don't think John and I are here saying that we've figured that out. I think what we've figured out is that there's a process that we need to be going through that's developmental in nature.
Sometimes when I think about death, my initial immediate visceral response still is, oh my heavens, it scares me. It scares the heck out of me.
So you're still working on it.
Still working on it. But in general, anyway. You know, Bill, this has really been fun, this show. I know I've made... or I feel like I've made a lot of discoveries. We had an amazing set of guests on the show. What I'd like to do is close this out by just asking those of you out there who are listening to share with us anything that was meaningful to you, or any value you got out of it, or any thing that made you angry about it, or any comments at all. What we really like to do is if in some way continue a dialogue with any of the folks who have been listening who would like to do so, simply by sending an email to us. And that email address, Bill?
Is shannon@regenesisgroup.com. And I think that our concern, it's not a concern. We've completed a 13-part series. It's an arc of exploring the aspects of the pieces of the whole, if you will, but in the arc of holding a whole, there's a paradox in itself. And we're going to take a bit of a temporary retirement. If there's a lot of interest in pursuing this at this deep level, we would love to keep doing it. And if there's not, well, we'll take a longer break.
Yeah, it's funny. And Bill, I just want to really thank you very much for inspiring me to engage this conversation. And I think maybe we ought to close out with one last time, remembering that to do different things, we need to do things.
And before we can do things differently, we need to think about them differently.
And to think differently, we need to be different. Thanks, everyone.
See ya.
For tuning in this week to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. Please join us again next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Green Talk Network, and make it a great and greener weekend.